Hello, everybody. I'm Trevor Loudon, and welcome to another episode of the Riding the Pine podcast. I'm here with, as always, Mr. Simon Dowgalis, Mr. Brett Bone, and finally, he's back, Mr. Nick Ashbourne.
The kid is back!
We missed you for so long.
It's great to see you sitting across the table from me, buddy.
It feels right. It feels natural.
You're home.
It feels like I never left, really.
You're home.
Yeah, now we can talk some baseball with a little bit of oomph behind it.
Oomph, also known as knowledge.
Yeah. So this podcast will be brought to you in four quarters, as always. First quarter, we're going to be talking some football. Week three recap. Cincinnati Bengals be buzzing. How far can they go? Denver, Seattle, overtime. What are your thoughts? And Pats almost gave it up to the Raiders. What's that all about, Brett?
Woof.
Then we have the second quarter. We're talking baseball. Jeter and a finale fit for a king. Phil Hughes missed out on a big payday. And then we're moving on to the third quarter. The NHL preseason. Is it too long? Too short? Who cares? Predictions on who could bounce back and who will regress in the 2014-2015 season. And in the fourth quarter, we're kind of making this a week-by-week thing. Key matchups for week four. We're going to be looking at Green Bay, Chicago, Philly, San Fran, and the Saints and Cowboys. But first, let's talk about last week's football. Week three recap. Let's kick it off. The Bengals are 3-0. Along with two other teams, but people seem to be thinking that the Bengals are the only team that are going to keep this going. How far can they take it? Let's start it with, the fair weather RTP guest, Nick Ashbourne.
Thanks for the introduction. I like the Bengals a lot. I think that people have been down on Andy Dalton. Some of that's fair. He's not an elite quarterback. But when you've got a defense like this team has, and we've got a stable of running backs that can move the ball on the ground, you don't need Peyton Manning to be a really, really good team. And that's what this team is. It's a really, really good team. Now, could they go to a Denver in the playoffs and win? I don't know. But I could see them going as far as the AFC Championship game. I don't think they're necessarily going to win the Super Bowl behind Andy Dalton. But I've been wrong before.
Yeah, I think I really like this team. It's funny how Fat Boris Diaw has become like the RTP's favorite NBA player. The Bengals over the first couple weeks have easily become RTP's favorite football team. We talk about these guys a lot. And I agree with what you said. Like early on when we were talking about Andy Dalton, we were talking about how, you know, he's not elite, but he's good enough to get the job done. They've got great playmakers. They've got AJ Green. They've got a stable of tight ends, too, to go along with that backfield. And, yeah, that defense, like I love that defense. So I think they're going to run that division. Like I'm not sold on the Ravens. I'm not sold on the Steelers. The Browns, I don't have to tell you that I'm not sold on the Browns, right? So I think that the Bengals have a really good shot. I think they can get that by, and I think they can make some noise. You know, Andy Dalton in clutch situations, I guess you worry about him, but, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm not as optimistic as you guys are. I am about the regular season success because the Bengals have made the playoffs for three straight years under Dalton, and it looks like it's going to easily be a fourth straight year. But like Nick was saying before, they're a really, really good team, but all they've proven over the last 3 years and part of this year is that they're a really, really good regular season team, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure at points last year and points in, you know, the first 3 years that Dalton's been quarterback, the Bengals have looked really, really good, and they've gone through really, really good stretches where, I mean, their D's been, you know, pretty good very good for the last couple of years. Yeah. Been a top 10 defense. Since AJ Green's come in, everyone knew he was going to be elite. You know, like Nick said, now they got Jeremy Hill and Gio Bernard in the backfield, which is definitely a solid tandem. But it's hard to take them totally, totally seriously as a legit contender until they at least win a playoff game.
Sure.
Which, as we all know, Andy Dalton hasn't done yet.
Yeah. Well, you can't really ask them to win a playoff game during the regular season. Like, there's nothing that can happen between now and the playoffs that, if that's your point of view, your mind's just not going to be changed by anything they do now, right? So are you just 100% wait and see on him?
Well, it's like in other sports, too. It's like, hey, I love the Penguins. Penguins are a really, really good team. They're really, really good in everything but the playoffs. So until they break through, yeah, we can say now, Penguins are a really good team. They're a legit contender. Weren't we saying that last year? Like, you know, it's like we have to see it to believe it. I know we obviously, you know, playoffs is – we have to wait and see. But does it not make sense, the point that I'm making?
No, I hear you. I hear what you're saying.
Like, yeah, they're a good team, but
– it's tough to –
good enough to do something in the playoffs? We don't know that yet, so let's chill a little bit on the Bengals being a legit contender.
It's tough to fully buy into them until you see some success. I see what you're saying, for sure. I think this is the healthiest the defense has been in a while. I think that they have got, you know, talent at every level, like the D-line, linebackers, and the secondary. I loved that Denard guy coming out of Michigan State. I know, I think he's only playing like a couple snaps a game, but man, I love that guy. Anyway, but I totally see Nick's point of view too. I think I'm buying more into the Bengals this year than I have in the previous years. And yeah, I think the AFC isn't tremendously strong, and I think that they're for sure one of the best teams in the conference, I think.
I would be surprised if they don't win a playoff game this year. That's as far as I would take it.
Nick's bold claim.
I'd be surprised if the team with the best record in the league doesn't win a playoff game. Wow. No, I don't buy into the idea that playoff football is magically different. I think, yes, they've lost a couple of playoff games, but that is literally a couple of games. I think it's too early to say Andy Dalton turns to dust under pressure. Like, we don't know that yet. The sample is too small for me. I think this team could make some noise. Like I said, maybe not a Super Bowl contender, but I think it could make some noise in the playoffs.
All right. Any predictions on their record come the end of the season?
If you want to look at their schedule, at Patriots versus Panthers, at Colts, home against the Ravens, Jaguars, Browns, away against Saints, Texans, Bucks, and then home against the Steelers, at Cleveland, home against the Broncos, at Pittsburgh.
There's some tough games on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got that first place schedule where they play like other first place teams. I don't know. Let's say, 11, 12 wins.
Yeah.
I want to say 12, but it's a bit ballsy, so I'm going to settle in on 11. That is a tough schedule. Mm-hmm. The AFC North is not full of good teams, but all of those teams will give you a game.
Oh,
and there's a chance,
yeah,
you can lose to a Browns team. There's a chance you can lose to a Steelers or Ravens team on any given night.
Yeah, it's true. Bone, win total?
10-6.
The classic Bengals. Yeah. 10-6. Yeah.
All right. Moving on to our second topic from week 3. Denver-Seattle was a pretty fun game to watch.
Yeah.
Went to OT, and it sparked a lot of debate about what people think about overtime in football. I know that Brett obviously has the unpopular opinion. Right? So what do you think, Brett?
I like to be entertained. I'm a sports fan. I like to be entertained. And you know what? Overtime entertains me more than NFL rules. It's college football rules.
Sure.
Because both teams get a chance to have the ball.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, I know a lot of people were complaining this weekend about, oh, you know, Peyton, he drove them down on that great drive to end the game, and we just had to see him, see what he could do in overtime, see if he could do it again.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily, you know, this there should be a rule change because, you know, because Peyton Manning doesn't have a chance or Tom Brady doesn't have a chance. Like I said, I think it's on pure entertainment value for myself. I like that both teams get the ball and they, you know, start at the 30-yard line or whatever it is. I think it's, like I said, entertaining. I mean, it guys making plays. Like I just feel like it adds, you know, a little more to that overtime experience.
Yeah, the thing that weirded me out a little bit about that whole kind of backlash of the overtime was, like, I think Manning said that the overtime rules put an onus on the coin toss, and like all these people were saying, you know, like it's unfair for this reason and that reason, and just get a stop. Even if you hold them to a field goal, you get the ball. Just don't allow a team to go 80 yards and win the game. Like, that's, I feel like that's totally fair. I don't think that's an onus on the coin toss. I think that's an onus on your defense, which is half of the half of your football team. Like, I don't understand why. I just didn't understand the backlash. And, like, yeah, it would have been sweet to see Peyton Manning get a shot to tie it up. You know, he was unreal on that last drive with whatever it was, like 50 seconds left to get that touchdown and 2-point conversion. But get a stop. Mm. Force a field goal. Do it. Like,
it's the team.
I don't know.
They're not playing the games into narratives. Like, they don't select a narrative and then decide, we're going to play the game the way the fans want to see it. The game is played the way it's played.
It's too bad. That'd be sweet.
Yeah, no, but people are like, oh, we should get to see Peyton Manning in overtime. Like, that's our right as a fan. Like, no. The game, there was a coin toss. I like the new rule. Before, when you could win with a field goal, I did not like that.
No, that's true.
I think they have made a good adjustment to the rule. And as Simon said, people are acting as if the Broncos didn't even get to play in overtime. Like,
it's like they lost the coin toss, and that was the game.
That was a pretty long drive. Like, you could have stopped them on downs. You could have forced a turnover. You didn't do any of those things. The Seahawks marched down the field. I mean, full disclosure to the Pineheads out there, I am a supporter of the Seattle Seahawks football team. But I believe that they earned a win with an 80-yard drive of that nature.
I agree.
I agree too. I got my point across, but I'm not. I agree with.
In this specific case, I thought the amount of backlash just wasn't warranted.
No, sour. It's sour fans that, like Nick said, they want a really, really appealing, sexy narrative where Peyton has a chance, or, you know, it's like, what if the Broncos won the coin toss and went down and scored a touchdown? It's like, oh my God, Russell Wilson, he didn't get a chance. Yeah. That's not fair.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think it would have happened, though, because people don't think of Russell Wilson the same way, right?
No one would have just
been talking about how brilliant Peyton
for
was.
For sure.
That's how it played.
He, by the way, in that overtime drive was awesome, and that was, like, I do think that Wilson gets a little overhyped, but that whole drive in overtime was, like, the reason why people think he's so great. He ran when he needed to run. He picked up first downs with his legs. He made the smart throws all the time, and he just, like, marched down the field the whole way. I thought that was a great drive from Wilson.
That's one thing you see with Wilson is that when the game is really on the line, and you don't hear me making comments like this, generally speaking, because I tend to believe that football is football is football.
Yeah.
That being said, when the game is on the line, Russell Wilson will run.
Yeah. Mm.
The Seahawks offense is much dangerous when he'll run, but normally I'd say he takes the risk possibly less than he should, but when the game's really on the line, he will use his legs, and that drive was a perfect example.
I agree. Yeah.
Exactly what he says about himself, too. He says that. He's like, I don't want to run. I run when I have to and when I need to, but, like, I'm not looking to, you know, spray out of the pocket and, you know, run for – I'd rather pass the ball to
a
receiver or Marshawn or
– Though you see him, there's a lot of time where I just see there's 6 yards for you right there. Just go take it, and he doesn't do it.
Especially when you see the flashes.
And
like,
then he winds up throwing it out of bounds.
He does that a lot. Yeah, he grounds balls and throws the ball away a lot. And so this is a debate that we were having with some, I can't call them colleagues, some other dudes that we are at Centennial with, about how he is afforded the luxury of being able to throw away passes. Like, on a 3rd and 7, he could throw it away because his defense is so good that, like, you know, other quarterbacks might get crushed for that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, hey, you got to take a shot. You got to give your receivers a chance. Like, he can totally do that because his defense is good. That Seattle team is awesome.
Also, you need to have good receivers to give your receivers a chance.
That's
true. Percy Harvin is a good weapon.
Yeah.
Mm. He's not necessarily a good receiver.
Agreed. Yeah. Quickly before we move off overtime.
Okay.
Brett brought up a hilarious thing that I totally forgot about. Remember when there wasn't the touchdown rule? It was just first points and overtime win.
Yeah.
And Marty Morningwagen, the Lions, won the coin toss and decided to kick.
Yeah.
And then the team was like, all right, and just went down and got field goal.
Literally signed his termination contract.
I totally forgot about that. What an idiot.
That's hilarious. And the last thing we have about week 3, I know Brett Bone is a Patriots fan, so let's all rip on Brett.
let's hear it.
They barely got by the Raiders last week. What do you think the reason for all that is, and do you think this is a scary time for the Patriots right now?
First of all, I didn't see the game against the Raiders last weekend. Obviously, I saw the highlights, and I know what went down. And it's a pretty simple answer, really. I'm not the best, analyzer of football, but I can read.
And analyst?
I can analyze. But it's the offensive line. I mean, I was just actually reading something this morning, and out of, some big shot on sportsillustrated.com, ranked, all the offensive linemen in the NFL right now that are starting at each position, and every single offensive lineman on the Patriots is in the bottom, I think 10 to 15%. It's 60 out of 80.
That's solid.
55 out of 65 left tackles. So, like, there's not one above average offensive lineman on that team. The Mankins trade in the preseason is looking like it is a bigger deal than it was thought at the time. Maybe Bill thought he was, really, really clever getting a.
What, Bill thinking he's smarter than the rest of the league?
Getting a nice athletic tight end to team up with Gronk and Tim Wright, who's done absolutely nothing this year. I would know that because I have him in fantasy. It's the offensive line. Tom doesn't have as much time as he needs, and also Tom's just missing his throws downfield. Yeah. He has one of the worst percentages in the league of throwing the ball 15 yards or more downfield. But along with that, who's the deep threat on that team? Dobson was a healthy scratch last week. Small guys, and Amendola, who's hardly playing. Edelman, who's a possession guy. LaFell, who is, I don't even know what he is. He blocks. He doesn't catch the ball.
Yeah.
Even though he's considered a wide receiver, he doesn't catch the ball. And then Gronk's probably not 100%. And,
no, yeah.
You know, it's easy for teams to hone in on Gronk and, you know, put more emphasis on him because what, are they going to worry about LaFell and whoever else is on the field? I mean, the offense doesn't look good. I mean, the defense has been – I don't think the defense has been bad or yeah, I don't think it's been great. I think it's just been okay. But it's the offensive side of the ball that's really worrisome.
Well, especially for comparing them to what you've seen in previous years, right? Like, that's the biggest thing. I mean the weird thing about the Patriots receiving core is that they, like as you said about the deep threat, they're not, they either don't have or aren't playing in Dobson, a guy who can really get that like separation deep downfield. So like, you know, Edelman's great for these like underneath and little pick routes and stuff like that, but he's not going to do some sweet double move and burn by a corner or anything like that. So Tom's trying to fit these deep throws into tiny windows, and it has been ugly. He hasn't completed like any deep shots, and it really limits the
what they
offense.
Can do. How
really,
many points
yeah.
they can put up, right?
Yeah.
Like I like the running game. I like Ridley and Vereen. Doesn't seem to be enough right now, though.
If I'm scheming against the Patriots, I'm going to play a soft zone, and then I'm going to come up and kill them on the underneath routes. Like there's no one, because no one scares me downfield. I can play close to line of scrimmage, and as long as my tackling is sound, I have no fears about getting burned by this team.
Yeah.
All right.
It's concerning.
Don't worry, man. I had that segment last week with the Saints. Yep. It's just like depressing hour for you and me.
And you can keep going on and on about it.
Yeah. Plus, we crushed the Giants for a while. Hopefully, the Seahawks go on a losing streak.
2-2, baby.
We can just crush everyone.
All right. Moving on. We have a special segment that I don't think we've ever done on the on the RTP.
It's been recommended.
This is a new segment. Pretty much an exact copy of what they do on TSN's panel. But this is a quiz, and Brett is going to be our quiz master. Today.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. All right, boys. We got three questions. And let's just start off with number one here. The biggest fantasy football surprise of the week. Sorry, of the year. Three options. A, DeMarco Murray healthy and leading the way for running backs.
Okay.
He's leading running backs in fantasy points to this point and also in yards. Andrew Luck averaging 27 points a week, which is top among quarterbacks. And he has the most fantasy points overall out of any player. And C is top running backs LeSean McCoy and Jamal Charles, off to very slow starts, who were, by no doubt, were first rounders in every fantasy football league, essentially.
For sure.
So, what is it? Simon, start us off.
I think McCoy and Charles are an obvious pick because they were so high, but I'm actually going to go with B. I'm going to go with Andrew Luck as the biggest surprise. You kind of thought he was going to be a good fantasy quarterback, but I don't think anyone expected him to be playing at this level. And he's one of those guys with Tom Brady where when you look at some of his stats on his deep throws, he doesn't actually complete a very high percentage of deep throws at all. So he's managed to put up these huge fantasy numbers with like little checkdowns and little short completions. I have him in our league that you know most of the guys are in. I won't talk about that league much because we did a lot last week. But I hope that he can sustain it, but I'm kind of worried because he doesn't really hit any of those home run throws at all. Like, T.Y. Hilton hasn't done much, so I'm going Andrew Luck.
All right. Scoops?
I'd have to say option C. Just because, if I'm comparing A and C, I don't think that DeMarco Murray is really that surprising to me with an O-line
that
solid.
O-line is awesome.
Yeah, and I think that, like, if you're, you know, Romo's probably not going to be in, like, I'd say full, like, shape, I guess, or his best shape until like maybe this week, maybe the next week. I don't think he's been operating at 100%. So I think like with an O-line like that, you can't afford to not run. So I don't think that I'm surprised by him doing well as the other two doing poorly.
Okay.
I think you make a good point about DeMarco Murray there. I would expect with that O-line and, like you said, Romo being banged up, that he would put up huge numbers if healthy. I think that if people felt confident he would stay healthy, he would have been that first-round type running back, pure feature back, great offense, et cetera, et cetera. I'm going to go with B as well, Andrew Luck. Some of the folks here probably know that I've been an outspoken critic of Luck in the past. I still believe that he's overrated in a number of respects.
I think you're crazy.
But because we can explain why Murray's doing what he's doing, we can also explain the issues with Charles' injury, the issue with McCoy, his O-line having some injury troubles. Those things are easily explainable. Why Andrew Luck is taking this step forward in spite of some issues with deep passing is harder to explain, and for me that makes it more of a surprise.
Sure. One answer, maybe, he did play Jacksonville and throw like four touchdowns.
Anyway, true.
Question two, Bo.
Yeah,
what's
great,
up?
Great answers, boys. Number two is the Bill Simmons suspension, 3 weeks from off of ESPN. Just simply A, agree with it. B, disagree with it. C, don't care much for it.
Like, don't care about it?
Well, just whatever. Yeah, cool. Like, just have no
okay,
opinion.
Okay, so kind of indifferent. Okay.
Yeah.
I was listening to that podcast like the day before the suspension came down and, like heard that rant and he literally dared ESPN to do it. I mean, I get why they did it. The ESPN is in the NFL's pocket to a large degree. So I get why they did it, but I think I got to disagree with it on the premise that he is so popular because of his opinions, and he is so popular because he's very outspoken on certain issues. Sure, he probably definitely went over the top on this one, but, you know, that's why you give Bill Simmons this money, and that's why you've given him this forum of Grantland, is to be outspoken, share his opinion, and, yeah.
Yeah, so. I think I'm agreeing with Simon, so I disagree with their decision. I mean, I was listening to it the same thing, like when it got released, and I remember thinking, oh, that's a cool rant, and then reading about him getting suspended, and I had to re-listen to the episode to find out like what exactly the part was that he was really getting suspended for. Obviously, he went on this huge rant, but I didn't really think of it as being, you know, that jarring or something that I haven't already heard or read on the internet already.
Plus, he literally, like the Thursday prior, like, you know, his weekly mailbag segment, it was the Goodell Must Go mailbag edition. So it's not like this was like a surprise. Anyway.
I'm also going to agree with the crowd here. I think that Simon makes a good point. Why do you have Bill Simmons if you're not going to let him do Bill Simmons type things? Also, as prospective journalists, I know Bill Simmons isn't really a journalist. It's concerning to see a major organization just muzzle someone in this way. This is, I mean, I'm not going to go the whole freedom of speech, blah, blah, blah. Like, you could go down that road forever. But the fact of the matter is that someone shared their opinion and then just got shut down. Yeah. That's not acceptable in my book.
All right, last one. Which NFL team gets on track first?
Oh.
A, the Pats. B, the Saints. C, the 49ers. Or D, the Packers, the Cheeseheads.
Sorry. C was 49ers. D was
Green
Bay. Man. First off, Brett, great job on these questions, buddy. I've really
enjoyed
them.
Yeah, nice work.
Thanks, boys.
Really enjoyed
them. Really hard on them.
Who gets on track? Oh, man, I want to say the Saints because I'm a fan of them. No one's going to like my answer. I'm going to say D. I'm going to go with Green Bay, and that's mainly because I still think that at this point Aaron Rodgers is the best player in the league. So I'm just going to trust that. I mean, the thing that kills me about Green Bay is that they're, like, trying to force a new identity down the throat of their team. Like, yeah, we got Eddie Lacy. We can run it a bunch. Like, they don't have a good offensive line, and they still have one of the best quarterbacks, so I don't know why they're really trying to force this run game. Just give the ball to Rodgers, man. Let him do what he does. Let him discount double-check all over the place. I'm going Packers.
Nikki, what are you thinking?
I just need a little more time.
Just the blatant delay tactic.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give Simon some love and say the Saints. I think that game with Cleveland was a bit of a disaster. That being said, I mean, I brought back to it before. That's a team that on the road can kind of surprisingly give you a game. I don't think that if a good team loses to a bad team, that we should just put a nail in the coffin. I think people do that too often. Good teams play bad games. That happens from time to time. That Atlanta game, that was just a shootout. Yeah. It could have come out either way.
I mean, both of their losses were last-second field goals.
Yes, I think that there's not that much from what the Saints are doing so far to suggest to me that they're far worse than they were last year. And last year, they were a very good team. I still believe this is a good team. And whereas the guys like the Packers, for instance, and the 49ers to an extent are playing bad football right now, I don't think the Saints are playing as bad football as some of the other teams.
Thanks, man.
I was going to go with the Saints, but now I feel like I can't. But I do believe just because of the fact that I have no confidence in the other three.
No. Pass.
Coming back. And just because I got a soft spot for the team, so I'll just pick the Saints for that reason.
All right.
Love you, boys.
That is it for
all right. Second quarter. Here we go. We're talking baseball and we're talking Jeets.
Yes.
Last night he hit a walk-off single in Yankee Stadium for his last game at home. It was a finale fit for a king, but there was a lot of heated debate going on in this studio before I turned the mics on about, well, Jeter, his legacy, what this farewell tour really represented, whether it annoyed you, whether it was perfect, whether it wasn't. So why don't we talk about Derek Jeter for a little bit, and why don't we go to Derek Jeter's number one fan to start, Mr. Douglas.
That is, maybe not number one, but I'm on the short list. I do love Derek Jeter. I'm a lifelong Yankees fan. Like, Jeter's my boy. And although I didn't see it because I was in a car on the way back from Peterborough, I did hear it on the radio. Baseball is kind of a radio game anyway, so that wasn't so bad. It was pretty damn cool. Like, I mean, I don't know what else to say. The stage, it took Robertson completely falling apart in the top of the ninth to get there. But then the stage was kind of set up. You know, did I have faith that he would hit it? Not really, because he hasn't been that good this year. But he did. And it was, I mean, I don't think you can deny that it was like a pretty cool moment. The fans were going nuts. Has it been over the top? Probably. Like, this whole farewell tour, probably. Has it hurt the Yankees? You know, maybe. It's pretty tough to, like, kind of quantify that, but I guess it has. I just think that, you know, it was as far as a send-off could go, it's pretty much impossible to script anything better than that. That was me treading lightly and not getting into the debate too much, because I want to hear what Nicky Smash thought about it.
All right, let's hear what he has to say.
I think it's ironic you have me back to talk some baseball in the first podcast back after a long absence, and then turn it right over to Douglas for some Jeets. I mean, there's not too far I can go without sounding kind of like the crotchety old man on the porch. Like, sure, I haven't really cared for this farewell tour. I found it annoying at times and over the top, and the commercials like make me want to blow my brains out and all that stuff. And I think that Jeter as a player has been kind of overrated to a huge extent, but everyone knows that. And Simon, we were talking before the show about Keith Olbermann sort of going off on Jeter. Yeah. And where I agree with Simon is that there's no need to go there, because there are people who are head over heels in love with Jeter, and there are people who are more, who focus more on his flaws, which is a little bit unfair, because no one can debate that he was a very, very good player for a very long time.
For a very long time. That's a huge part of it, right?
No one should be saying that he wasn't, despite defensive issues and the fact. Anyway, other things. So the reality is, I think that this debate has taken on far more venom than is necessary.
Yeah.
And it's gotten nasty. And I just kind of, I'm fatigued with it. I'll be happy to see him off and then not really think about him for the rest of my life. Yankees fans.
I mean, I'll make you think about him a couple times here and there.
Yeah, I mean, Yankees fans will. They'll keep Jeter in their minds and in their hearts. I don't know. I think that's my number one takeaway, is just I'm kind of sick of the whole thing.
It was a cool moment, though. Come on. Even you have to say it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice when things work out in that, like, tidy manner the way we want them to. It would be nicer, and again, we brought up the stat before the show. I don't want to steal credit from Douglas on it, though it's been buzzing around the old interwebs about how the game was the first time at Yankee Stadium that Jeter played a game where the Yankees were out of contention.
Yeah, officially eliminated.
So in that way, that kind of sours it a little bit, in the sense that the hit didn't mean anything. That being said, if you go flip it the script the other way, if the Yankees were in contention, the fact that Jeter's playing every day and all these things become very contentious as an issue. So I think that it was probably for the best for all parties that the Yankees were kind of out of contention over the side, so they were able to focus on the Derek Jeter sideshow. Things would have gotten very messy if the Yankees were in the thick of it.
Sure. The one thing I want to say about the Olbermann thing, too, is that like, I don't understand when a rant like that, like, I don't understand who he's arguing against. Like, I feel like he set up, like, some straw man of some guy who is standing on the pulpit saying, Derek Jeter is, like, an all-time top three Yankee, which, like, I've never heard anyone claim ever before. And, like, you know, it's a known fact. Even, like, I don't know, maybe there are Yankees fans who just sip the Kool-Aid to a certain extent, but, like, I'm a pretty diehard Yankees fan, and I know that he was defensively dramatically overrated for the vast majority of his career. Like, I'm totally fine with that. I don't really know who Olbermann was trying to convince, you know, that Jeter was a little bit overrated. I think that's pretty widely known at this point. It was the fact that he played so long and in the biggest market, like, that just kind of fed into this whole thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it's unique to baseball when you have a player who plays under a spotlight for a long period of time by playing for the New York Yankees, an iconic franchise in baseball, unfortunately. But like iconic franchise in other sports, like people who play for the Lakers, for instance, if you play for the Lakers for a long time and are really, really good, there's also a chance you're going to be overrated just because you've had this exposure for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we can treat this as a Derek Fisher. We treat this as a unique situation. I think it's kind of, this is playing out the way you'd expect.
Yeah.
All right, Nick. I know you wanted to touch on Phil Hughes.
Yeah,
also a former Yankee. Yeah. Woo!
Yeah, this is a big Douglas episode for all the Doug heads out there. Yeah. They're going to really enjoy this one. No, I just thought that's an interesting story because sports is becoming such a huge money business. And we saw this a little bit when Gil Mesh walked away from a bunch of money and decided to retire from the Kansas City Royals a few years ago. But Phil Hughes, let's get a little summary in there. He had a clause in his contract that would give him $500,000 if he hit 210 innings, which is fairly hard to do. Not a lot of people are doing it, but he's had a fantastic year, setting the record for qualified starters in strikeout to walk ratio well over 11, beating Brett Saberhagen, one of my all-time favorites. So that hurts a little bit.
Shout out to Brett Saberhagen.
Yeah, he doesn't get enough love around here. So he had the chance to break this record. He needed to pitch 8 innings, and he had got to 7 innings and 2 outs, and then the rain hit, and there's a rain delay, and so he lost his chance. And so Minnesota told him, go out for an out, get someone out of the bullpen, we'll give you that opportunity, which I think as a franchise is a pretty generous move on their part, because they don't really necessarily owe that to him. It would be easy for them to say, it's unfortunate, that's the way it goes, he's not scheduled to pitch again.
Yeah.
So that would have been easy for them to do. Generous on their part. Phil Hughes says, no, my season's done. I'm not going to take the $500,000. So there's two sides. One of the, it's kind of annoying. It's like, man, if I had the opportunity to get $500,000 and I just had to show up for what, 5 minutes of work? Something like that. So the fact he's turning that down for all of us out there who are grinding on Dollarama bread and peanut butter, like that hurts a little bit. But on the other side, it's a guy giving up the opportunity to showing that money isn't everything to him. Yeah. So I think that's kind of cool, too, in a sports climate where money has infiltrated everything.
Especially baseball.
Yeah, I mean, the contracts in baseball are nuts. I mean, to be fair, he's making good money this year, around $8
But cool story, though. Way to go, Phil.
All right, moving on. Out of baseball and into some power rankings.
power rankings.
So this week we're ranking berries.
Berries.
Someone needs to remind me what the four of them are, because I don't know if I got them right.
Blackberries, blueberries, strawberries, and raspberries.
I figured the only ones that matter.
The only ones that count. Don't give me any of that boys and stuff.
All right. Let's quickly flip it over to Brett, because he's probably got the worst list.
I actually, you know, for those of you who don't know, which is every single Pinehead, and probably even you three, I worked produce for 2 years before I came to sports journalism. Yeah. So I know a crap load about berries and really any fruit or vegetable out there.
Yeah. Berry expert.
I mean, I'm not going to explain these, you know, in intricate detail, but number four is blackberries. I feel like if any of you don't have blackberries, it's number four. I don't know what you're thinking. I just don't. It's not that they're awful. They're just not as good as the other three. So much clearly not as good. Number three, strawberries. Gonna move on. Not gonna explain that. And number two, blueberries, which leaves raspberries as number one, and that's really the only one I want to touch on.
Wow.
I think raspberries are amazing. Yeah. I have some at home. I have them in yogurt. You know, a lot of mornings, at least lately. Just raspberries and yogurt. You know, a lot of antioxidants. Same with blueberries, so they're very good for you. They have that. They have that health thing to go along with them. And I just think raspberries taste a little better than blueberries.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Nothing against blueberries. But yeah, that's all I got.
Nice list, bro.
My list is scarily similar to Brett's. I agree, blackberries have got to go on the bottom. I actually think blackberries are a little bit underrated, but the other ones are titans in the berry
absolutely.
Game.
Yeah.
Blackberries can't compete. Next up, I've got strawberries. Strawberries are great. Everyone knows what they bring to the table. Very safe berry. Yeah. Even the kind of lower end strawberries will get the job done.
Yeah.
Then number two, I've got raspberries. Raspberries are fantastic. Right. They've got that sour bite to them that the other berries don't bring to the table. But number one, blueberries got to be sort of wild. Those small wild Ontario blueberries that you buy on the side of the road. Those are arguably maybe my favorite food item in existence.
Whoa.
So I had to put them number one there. Whenever people are getting smoothies, it seems like strawberry banana is the typical one. I'm always looking for the one with blueberries in it.
Wow. Good things grow in Ontario. So my list, blackberry last, obviously, because let's get real. Number three, and this was tough because I actually love the three berries that are above blackberry. Number three is Raz, man.
No!
Number three is Raz. I know it's not going to be popular. It just is. That's how it is, boys. I'm sorry. Number two is blue. I do love me some blueberries. Number one is straw, just because I love it. It's a great dessert berry, too. You can do all sorts of kind of stuff with it. It's a great milkshake berry. I'm one of the guys where one of my favorite flavor combinations going, period, is strawberry banana. Love that. Going strawberry. Strawberry kiwi also, really good.
Yeah, that is so good, actually. Might have changed my list, but it didn't. Bottom is the blackberry. Sorry, womp womp. But I do think it's an underrated food item in general. I think it's a good fruit. I like the blackberries.
Okay,
they're just not as good as the other ones.
No.
Strawberry is in third for me. I actually have the same list as Brett, so I'm not gonna.
Man, the last 2 weeks, my list.
I know. Blueberry at number two. Raspberry. I've just always been a fan. Like it was one of those things where, like, when I was probably like a really little kid. Like, I remember my parents told me, like, I ate a raspberry once, and my face just went like, oh, yeah.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. And so I loved it. I just in your produce background, which of these four berries would you say consistently, like, comes in bad or, like, goes bad?
Oh, yeah. Strawberries are the worst.
Yeah?
Strawberries are the worst.
Did that play into your ranking of them? Or?
I mean, I've seen some really, really awful, moldy, disgusting strawberries in my time that probably you guys haven't. But no, it didn't play a factor at all. I kept that bias out of it.
On the next episode of Riding the Pine, Moldy Berries.
I think my list was the worst this week.
Yeah?
Just judging by how everyone else is, like, you guys all kind of were pretty close.
It may have been the most unpopular, but it might not have been the worst.
Well,
it's only the worst when Brett does it.
Okay, good.
When you do it, it's unpopular.
Sweet. Thank you.
Double standards, boys.
Third quarter, we have the NHL preseason. Brett wanted to talk about that. Is it too long, Brett? Does anyone care? Are Leaf fans the only ones that care?
Oh, God. I care.
They care.
Yeah.
I care personally hard. And I'll tell you the reason that I do care is because I like to see teams, you know, put out their younger players that they won't have a chance to see playing at that level. Obviously, it's watered down to an effect because obviously teams aren't starting their opening night lineups and, you know, the best
squads
of the best aren't playing exactly. But, you know, it's nice to see. Like, I look at a team like my hometown team, Sens. So you see kids like, you know, Curtis Lazar, first rounder from a couple years ago. Matt Pumpel was a first rounder a couple years ago. And, you know, these guys probably aren't going to make the team, but having these seven preseason games, it gives them a chance to play at that level, which is by no means even watered down, a much, much higher level than what they're going to play in the whole season, which is junior hockey against, you know, 16 to 20 year olds. You're not playing against men by any stretch of the imagination. So I like to see teams, you know, get their younger guys out there, get the guys that they don't have the most background on playing at that level. So they can see what they're about, you know. They can see how they adapt to the speed of play, you know, and just how they, you know, can perform at that level. Is it too long? Seven games? Maybe only need five. I mean, I feel like we're splitting hairs here, though.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Five games, six games, seven. I mean, is there a huge difference between those numbers?
What do you think of it as a litmus test for a team like going into the season? Do you think it's an accurate representation of how that team will
play? Not at all. Not at all. Because I think coaches just use it as a way to, you know, if a new coach is coming into a team, they use it as a way to implement their systems. So see how these systems that they want to work with, you know, the players in their organization, see how their systems work. If they're changing from, you know, changing forechecks or changing, you know, defensive strategies, offensive strategies. So it's somewhat of a gauge of how, you know, the systems will work. But like you said, like the lineups are so, there's split squads. There's like random guys playing with like superstars. Like it's like Getzlaff will play a game. And then instead of having Perry and some other line mate, it'll be two guys that aren't even going to sniff the NHL or the AHL just because they want to, you know, see what a younger guy can do within an elite player. So
did you see those pictures of in Anaheim during preseason's games? A lot of the players that aren't playing in the game work throughout.
Yeah,
the,
I did
so there's
see
that picture of Corey Perry like pouring beers at the concession stand and stuff. Pretty cool. Moving on, just, you know, briefly looking at the 2014-2015 season, I know that you wanted to look at some teams that you think might bounce back or some teams that will fall further down the ladder or, you know, have seen their good days behind them.
Yes, yes, I did. And, you know, just for timing reasons, I have one bounce back candidate and one, you know, possible regression, team of regression that I could see this year. For the bounce back, as much as it kind of hurts me to say this because I really, really dislike this team and a lot of players on the team, especially one of them.
Oh!
I think the Caps are going to have a better – I definitely think they're going to make the playoffs, and I think they'll be one of the top-tier teams in the Eastern Conference, obviously barring health issues and all that.
How upset are you with yourself right now?
It's not because of Ovi, though. It's because of other factors. Other factors are coming into it, and those factors are – I like Braden Holtby, their goalie. He really broke out in 2012. You know, he regressed a little bit last year, but, you know, digging into the stats, he had a .928 save percentage at even strength, which was actually in the top half of the league. So, I mean, Washington's penalty kill wasn't very good last year, so that was hurting him. And also, whether they overpaid or not, which they absolutely 100% did, they did get two proven good NHL defensemen in Niskanen and Orpik, who they'll probably pair together since that makes so much sense because they're Niskanen's a right-hand shot, Orpik's a left.
Didn't we have the Caps GM here once?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
He seems pretty confident about those guys. So that'll. I mean, to pair those guys with and then Mike Green, who may or may not be there, he's a pretty good, you know, trade candidate at this point. But Carlson and Alzner, I mean, they have a good decor in front of Holtby. And then the big thing for me is bringing in Barry Trotz, longtime Preds coach. Nicky Smash knows a lot about him. he's more defensive minded. I feel like he's going to, you know, implement the proper systems with the players that he has at his disposal. And I think the Caps are going to give up a lot less goals, and I think they're going to score, you know, around the same amount. Hopefully Ovi gets a bunch less and other people step up instead.
And your team that may regress this season?
Yeah, the Avalanche. Whoa. And I like the Avalanche. I like a lot of players on their team, in particular MacKinnon and Landeskog, because they're absolute beautytrons.
Why do they fall?
You know, this is an analytics kind of thing. This has been a hot topic around the hockey analytics. A lot of their metrics seem very, very unsustainable this year, meaning they gave up a lot of shots last year. Their special teams weren't necessarily great. Their shooting percentage was really high, which is probably bound to come down. And they, you know, a lot of those under the radar metrics that aren't in the mainstream are really working against the Avs. And then the other thing is just they're literally in the toughest division in hockey, and they just lost their number one center, Paul Stastny. So they're in the Central. They have to deal with the Blackhawks, the Blues, Minnesota, Dallas, Nashville, who could very well bounce back, and then the Jets, who are just not very good. But those other teams are really good. So I could definitely see the Avs. You know, maybe they still make the playoffs, but they're not going to – I don't think they're going to win the Central again.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's enough hockey, I guess. We're going to move back into football for the end of the podcast today. Before the fourth quarter, we're just going to do our classic lock of the week. So –
Simon, lock of the week, real quick. What
lock
is
of the
it?
Week, I'll go really quick. Atlanta -3 at Minnesota. Minnesota starting Teddy Bridgewater. He's getting his first career start. That guy mustered very few points against a terrible Saints defense last week. I think Atlanta's offense is way too good for that Minnesota defense, and I don't like any part of the Vikings offense.
All right. I'm going Indy at home -8. Titans suck.
That was great. I'm going to go Saints on the road.
Love it.
-3 in Dallas. Last time the Saints and the Cowboys met, albeit it was at the Dome.
It was in the Superdome.
Yeah, it was in the Dome. But the Saints set a bunch of NFL records and absolutely crushed the Cowboys. The Cowboys' defense has gotten no better than last year. Their secondary has gotten no better. It's probably gotten worse. And what a way to get your passing attack back on track than playing the Cowboys. Yep. So I definitely see the Saints getting back on track this week and covering that.
It's an interesting game. That's an aggressive lock for me, but I do like the Saints to win. My lock is the Pittsburgh Steelers taking on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at home. To use his Scoop's elegant and simple logic, the Buccaneers are a terrible football team. The Steelers are not a fantastic football team, but they are way better than the Buccaneers. The spread is -7.5.
True.
All right.
What? Sorry. I'm going to do a first here in RTP. I want to bet Nikki Smash $5.
Whoa.
That the Bucks cover that spread.
What are you bet?
Reasoning. So the Bucks played last Thursday, right? A little extra time to prepare, and they have to have some sense of pride. They got absolutely steamrolled. Like, I have to think that they're coming back with a serious amount of fire against the Steelers this week. I'm not saying they're a good team. I don't think they're going to win, but I think they could hopefully cover a touchdown. $5 on it.
Can we get a handshake?
That is taken.
All right.
Brett Bowen loves Mike Glennon.
All right. Fourth quarter. Just key meet matchups in week four. We're going to kick it off. Well, I think we didn't have it as the first one, but I think we should since we've already had two people comment on it. Saints Cowboys.
Sure.
The night game on Sunday.
Yeah, Sunday nighter. I'm excited. It's a primetime game for my boys for the Saints. The spread's -3 there. It's I don't know. The Saints are, I think, 1-7 in their last 8 road games. They are a terrible road team, but this will be in dome-like conditions down there in Dallas. So, you know, I just have no faith in the Dallas defense. I don't have much faith in the Saints defense, but they at least showed me last year that they can be somewhat competent. So I've got New Orleans winning this one.
I do too, and I think you guys...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, New Orleans to win this one. It's going to be a great game.
Yeah, it'll be a great night game.
Fantasy football owners.
Sure. Get your Cowboys and Saints in the lineup now.
All right, let's move on to the first game we were going to do. Green Bay at Chicago. Picks around the table. Let's go to Nick.
I like the Bears in this one. We were talking about earlier, the Packers aren't playing good football right now. I'm not confident they can go in and beat a division rival. I don't think that the Bears are fantastic, but I think right now the Packers look very shaky, and it's a big ask to have them go to Soldier Field and win at this point in the season.
Yeah, I got burned last week by the Packers, I'm going to go right back to them.
Oh,
like Simon said earlier in the show, I really, really believe that Aaron Rodgers is one of the best quarterbacks in the league, if not the best overall quarterback. I mean, neither defense is good. I don't think you can really say that anybody has the edge there. But, I mean, even with the weapons that Cutler has in Marshall and Jeffrey, I think, you know, obviously Rodgers has his own array of weapons as well. And, you know, I like him to tear apart that Chicago defense a little more than Cutler tears apart the Green Bay defense.
Nice.
I don't have much confidence in Green Bay's defense right now. I'm going to go with Chicago.
I am going to go Green Bay through no sort of actual analysis. I just have one of those gut feelings. I think it's going to be a close game, and Cutler's going to throw one of his sweet late-game interceptions.
All right, and the last key matchup for Week 4 that we are going to be looking at, just bear with us. I mean, Week 4 doesn't really present the most key of marquee matchups.
It is a rough week.
Yeah, so this last one, Philly at San Francisco. I personally don't think that this Philly train is going to keep on going. I just don't buy it. San Francisco.
I'm excited to
at
see
at home.
Yeah, at home's huge. I'm excited to see the kind of like rough and tumble Niners defense versus this kind of finesse spread weird offense. I think it's going to be a really interesting matchup. I am going to go. Oh, I was thinking Philly until just now. I'm going to go San Francisco.
I am already on the record saying San Francisco, so I'm going to go back to it. You said about the interesting matchup between San Francisco's defense and Philly's offense. I think the San Francisco offense and its physicality is going to just crush a soft Philly defense.
3 points all year in the second half for the Niners offense, by the way, which is just ridiculous. That's, I know it's probably so through happenstance and whatever, but that is a ridiculous stat.
Philly's also been down 10 each game.
Yeah, so
and
really
I just don't think that if you
team.
Continue to do that, I don't know.
That's I hear you. Me. I hear you.
Yeah, I mean, not to sound like a broken record, but I'm going to go with the 49ers, too. I think they get their first win at whatever, the Levi's Stadium. Yeah, I think they feed off the home crowd. Philly's, you know, it's been nice the first 3 weeks. They've faced a lot of adversity. They've come through, but I think the train ends here. There's
the
a stop.
Buck stops here.
Yes. Sure.
Yes.
All right.
Precisely.
Okay. Well, that's all for this week on the eighth episode of Riding the Pine podcast. You know, Pineheads, you can always tune in. We try to get these up on Friday. Last week, we got it up on Monday, even though all our predictions kind of already took place. So hopefully we'll try to get this one up today. You can probably catch it on CentennialOnDemand.com. Maybe YouTube if we try and figure that out.
Yeah,
I'm Trevor Loudon. You can follow me at Trev Loudon. Simon Douglas.
At Douglas, D-A-U-G-U-L-I-S.
Nick Ashbourne, finally back.
It was a great ride, and I hope to have a better attendance record going forward. Maybe as close to 50%.
We missed you, man.
Brett Bone.
Yeah, at Brett Bone 87. Crosby's the best. He's the man.
All right, cool. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. Tune in next week for the next episode of Riding the Pine.
Peace.